Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined this morning by our live blog directors, Jamie George and John Rahor. We're talking about a Packers victory this past week over the New Orleans Saints. We're getting ready for a three-game road trip starting this Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts. To talk about that game, to talk about the Green Bay Packers, we have a guest on the line joining our show this morning, as he does every Wednesday, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how are you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. Thanks for joining us, as always. Now, the Packers offense this past Sunday, Nathan, finally started to look alive, started to look like the team that was on the field last year. It was a showdown between two good quarterbacks, Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. What did you see from the Packers offense this past Sunday?
I saw that Aaron Rodgers has done better in this game than he was in the last few games. When the ball was in the air for 10 yards or less, he completed 27 of his 28 passes, which is excellent. He now leads the league in accuracy percentage, which is completion percentage adjusted for drops, passes thrown away, spikes, those kind of things, at 82%. So even though he wasn't throwing the ball down the field as much as he was last year, it was still enough to get the job done in this game.
One of his favorite targets on the day was James Jones, the Packers wide receiver, who had, in my opinion, probably one of his best games ever. What did you think of him?
James Jones did have a few good plays in this game. He was mostly going up against Jabari Greer of the Saints. And with that, he had two touchdowns and two first downs. And then something you might not have noticed is that he also had a good game when it came to screen blocking. There were two plays where the Packers called screens and Jones had a good block that helped the screen play succeed. However, we also thought that Randall Cobb had maybe a better game than Jones did, since he had just as many first downs, they just weren't for touchdowns. And then he did so on significantly fewer pass routes, as Jones ran 45 pass routes, which is quite high, while Cobb just ran for 24.
Fair enough. You did give Jones an extra point, though, or something for that amazing catch at the end, didn't they, at Pro Football Focus?
Oh, yeah, he did get a good grade on that play.
Okay, very good. The offensive line did a good job against the Saints, albeit against maybe, you know, we might categorize the Saints as not the greatest defense in the world. But still, 1 week after the Packers gave up 8 sacks in the first half to the Seattle Seahawks, they pitched a shutout on Sunday against the Saints. That and the run game wasn't too bad either, was it?
No, the offensive line had a very good game. In terms of pass protection, they just allowed one hit and 6 hurries, which is very good. TJ Lang and Saturday had perfect games in that. And with that, Aaron Rodgers averaged 8.5 yards per attempt when there was no pressure and just 3.8 yards per attempt the few times he was under pressure. So it was good the offensive line could hold the defense intact as much as they did. And then in terms of run blocking, Brian Bulaga had the best day of the group, while it was also John Kuhn and the tight ends who did a really good job when it came to run blocking, which is why the Packers had such a good day running the ball as they did.
Good to hear. On the other side of the football, the Packers' run defense comes up with maybe its best performance of the year, but on the same side of the coin, the pass rush wasn't all that great. How did the Packers' defense perform?
The Packers' defense had very much a mixed game. When it came to the run defense, if you look on our site, on our premium stats on the game, when you look in the run defense column, almost everyone has a green number, which green means that they played well. Well, in pass rush, most of them have a red number, which means they didn't do well. They held Pierre Thomas to just 1.6 yards per carry and Mark Ingram to just 2.2 yards per carry, which both of those are excellent numbers, which allowed the Saints to have to pass the ball So the Packers used a lot of 6 defensive backs and even sometimes 7 defensive back sets to counteract that. However, in the pass rush, Clay Matthews had just 1 sack and 3 hurries, which sounds like a good game, but he did so on 50 pass rushes, which we would expect a little more productivity out of him if he's rushing the passer that many times. And the rest of the team combined had just 1 sack and 2 hurries, which isn't very much at all.
Very interesting. I thought there were some perhaps notable good performances by Tremont Williams and DJ Smith. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree on DJ Smith, especially late in the game. He did excellently in terms of the pass game. I've criticized him in the past for his play in coverage, but he had 3 big pass deflections all late in the game, and then on another play on a completed pass made a tackle for a loss. So he had a huge role in the Packers' victory. Tremont Williams, on the other hand, he had his good and bad in that game. He had 2 pass deflections, which were very good, but then also allowed 5 first downs, allowed 3 other catches for a total of 82 yards. And in this season, Williams has allowed 24% of the passing yards that the Packers' defense has allowed, which isn't very good.
Very interesting to hear that. The Packers this upcoming Sunday play a Colts team that was the worst in the NFL last year. But of course, they had the first draft pick, have Andrew Luck. What do you see out of this Colts team, and can you give us a little preview maybe of what the Packers will be facing?
Sure, there isn't all that much to be worried about in this game. Andrew Luck has been having some struggles as a rookie. He is so far as one of the worst quarterbacks in accuracy percentage. They still have Reggie Wayne on offense, who is still at his age being one of the better receivers in the league. And then their defense is transitioning to the 3-4 defense this year. And with that, they've been able to come up with a little better pass rush, not just out of their elite pass rushers, but out of their interior pass rush and their inside linebackers as well. But with that, it'll really be the intangibles of the Colts are coming off of a bye week, and then also they're missing their head coach, which hopefully he gets a successful recovery soon. But that could lead to the team to fall apart, or it could lead them to rally around and want to win even more for their coach. So if the Colts have a good game, it'll really be part of the intangibles that we can't see right now.
Definitely. Nathan, thank you very much for joining us today, talking about the game, previewing the next game, as you do every Wednesday here at Railbird Central. Take care, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, have a good one.
All right, thank you. Once again, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us right here at Railbird Central. Thanks to him, and thank you, everyone, for joining us on the show today as we get prepared for the Packers next game. As I said, the Packers getting ready for a 3-game road trip. Not exactly like baseball where you're on the road for days, weeks at a time even. But after every game, the Packers do come home to Green Bay and practice and prepare for the next opponent. But, you know, it's a little bit different when you say a 3-game road trip when you're talking about baseball as opposed to football. But still, very not easy by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not saying that. And it's something that's, not very common in football. A 3-game road trip. You just don't see that. I mean, the NFL tries to avoid, to their credit, as much as possible, any more than 2 consecutive games away from home. Not to say it doesn't happen. Obviously, the Packers facing that this year here. But it is pretty rare when it happens, and almost never see anything more than 3 consecutive. Rarely see further than that. As Jamie Joris points out on the live blog here, the games are not that far away, which is kind of important. You know, if you were to play three straight road games with trips to the East Coast and then the West Coast or something like that, or, you know, all the way down to Florida and then over to Seattle or something along those lines. You know, that's a different thing. But as Jamie points out, Houston is the farthest game, but, you know, Packers basically staying in the Midwest kind of with trips to Indianapolis and then St. Louis to close it out. So, yeah. In fact, by the way, I'm excited about this. On Friday, this Friday, we'll have Kareem Copeland of NFL.com joining us on the show to talk about Indianapolis and to talk about the Packers' upcoming football game. So, as you might remember, Kareem Copeland is a former Packers beat writer at the Green Bay Press Gazette, has now moved on, now lives in Indianapolis, and covers the NFL for NFL.com and their Around the League blog, along with other guys such as Greg Rosenthal, Brian McIntyre, other people covering the league there. So excited to have him on the show on Friday previewing a Packers football game against the Indianapolis Colts. So, yep, it is Wednesday, folks, and the Packers are getting back to work today. First practice since that game on Sunday against the New Orleans Saints. A big win for the Packers, evening the record at 2-2 in the season, even though they should be 3-1, right? Following the fail in Seattle. We won't talk about that. Actually, we will maybe very briefly here. Not that we're going to analyze it in depth, but I'm working on the Packers Daily Links kind of as we speak. Not this very second, this very moment. I'm trying to talk here and do a show at the time, but I was preparing it before I was getting ready for the show, and I had to put it on hiatus for a minute while I do the show, and we'll publish it probably shortly after the show. But anyway, the lead story today is Aaron Rodgers in his weekly radio show yesterday at the ESPN radio affiliate in Milwaukee, WAUK 540 AM, also simulcasted or whatever broadcasted, live at ESPNWisconsin.com as well as ESPNMilwaukee.com and ESPNMadison.com, I think, too. Is that enough? Did I cover everything? Is there enough there to make sure everything gets mentioned? Anyhow, Aaron Rodgers saying that he was thanked by the referees for his comments the previous week on his radio show, in which he apologized for the poor officiating in the NFL, apologized to fans, I don't want to say on behalf of the NFL, because I'm not sure exactly the NFL shared all of his sentiments, but Aaron Rodgers speaking to the officials before the game, this is according to Aaron himself, on his own radio show, went up to talk to the officials, the now regular officials, from the unionized officials, and the unit led by referee Jeff Triplett, went to talk to them, and Aaron Rodgers thanked them, and even said, even though he said thanks, it wasn't going to preclude him from yelling at the referees, but referees also thanking Aaron Rodgers for his comments, apologizing for the replacement officials. And saying that the product of the NFL basically wasn't up to par, and the fans deserve better. So interesting there to hear that from Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers, of course, had his takes on many topics, as he does every week there at ESPNWisconsin.com and the ESPN radio affiliate there. So get ready to check that out in the Packers Daily Links, one of the most notable developments in the past 24 hours or so, as the Packers transitioning from a win over the Saints to a game against the Indianapolis Colts. And with four games now into the season, the NFL season is now one quarter done, and you're starting to see people do a little analysis, a little bit of looking back at how the season has gone one quarter into the year. And you can check that out right here at Cheesehead TV. I know our own Zach Cruz has published his quarter grades for the Packers offense. It's now up on the homepage, or at least will be when the show is done. You could check out a link to it in the bottom right-hand corner of this page where it has all our latest posts. But report card grades starting to file in. I know Zach will be posting his defensive grades later today. And then I am posting a power ranking of every player on the Packers roster. It published at Bleacher Report, so I'll be providing a link to that after the show. So be ready to check that stuff out. Kind of interesting here that, you know, this is a, you know, we're one quarter of the way in trying to analyze what's happened, what's going on. It seems so weird because, you know, it is still a relatively small sample size to be, you know, making any sort of firm analysis on how the season might play out or how any particular player's year might play out. That's premature, but we are getting, the first returns in. We can start to make partial judgments. This is by no means, how we think the season will end for these players or a final grade. So it is, you got to do take these things with a grain of salt, but it is interesting to look at these things a quarter of the way into the season, see things where they've been and where they're headed. And the Packers, a quarter of the way into the season, a 2-2 record certainly could be better, and it also could be worse. I think Packers fans, of course, is hoping it would be better, especially in light of the blown call in the Seattle game that cost the Packers a victory. Definitely a disappointment there. I think a lot of people think the record should be 3-1 and not 2-2. But, all things considered, I think the Packers, in a way, kind of lucky that they're just 2-2 because, there's a lot of things this team is feeling its way out right now. The offense has been really slow this season to get going and finally started to play up to its potential, I think, on Sunday. And still not even then, there were things that went wrong on offense. You don't like to see the turnover by Aaron Rodgers, the interception, things like that. You wish that the running game would have got going better in the second half. Not to say that they did poorly, and I guess that's partially the result of the turnover there itself, that the Packers turned the ball over and thus didn't have possession of the football. So partially the result there. I do see some interesting questions here on the live blog. I guess I want to talk about, seeing as they are kind of pertinent. I like talking about these things. Kevin Lamb asks, are they still using the grow lights at Lambeau this year? And from pictures I've seen, they are still using the grow lights. I don't think that'll be going away anytime soon. I think you can assume they'll be using those. I wouldn't see why they would stop using them. They seem to have helped Lambeau Field out greatly, extending the grow season of the grass on the field and basically keeping it alive longer. So I see no reason the Packers ever going to stop using that anytime soon. Kind of a technology that they've been playing with. I think I read somewhere they got that from Europe and like soccer teams using it over there. But great idea, and I think it only helps keep that field, you know, in good shape, in better shape late in the season. Obviously, you know, when it gets cold out, the grass dies, but the Packers doing a good job to keep that alive. And, you know, that's important when you're playing December and January football games. Good question here, too, from John on the live blog. With Mike Neal done with his suspension, who gets the axe? My guess is Philip Merling if there's no other injuries. So good question from John. Of course, Mike Neal's suspension is officially over, but the Packers have received a one-week exemption to make a decision on Mike Neal. And basically, you know, it's the Packers get to see where he's at. When you are suspended, you cannot even practice with the Packers. So he has not been in Green Bay. I mean, he could live in Green Bay, but he just couldn't, you know, go to Lambeau Field. He couldn't go to the team facilities, even weight train, workout, anything like that. He's got to do that away from the facility. You know, I imagine he probably went maybe back to his hometown, something like that. Or did I see Florida maybe in an article somewhere? Probably worked out with a trainer, you know, an elite facility down there, something like that. Regardless, he's now eligible to come back, but the Packers don't have to make a move. Mike McCarthy said during his press conference, he talked about the exemption. I think Dom Capers did an interview with reporters as well. They want to see where Mike Neal's at. He's been away from the facility for 4 weeks. So, they want to see if he's in game shape. They want to see if he's healthy. I have no reason to think he's not healthy. He was all training camp, actually had a very good training camp in preseason. But they just want to make sure because, you know, they get a week. So there's no reason the Packers, if they feel Mike Neal is ready, they could make a decision before Sunday. They could, at the end of this practice week, after Friday is done, decide, okay, we're going to cut somebody, bring Mike Neal up. There's no pressing matter to do it right now as soon as Mike Neal comes off from suspension. So Packers just taking their time, and if they feel, hey, Mike Neal probably not ready yet, still needs another week, they can get through Sunday's game even, and then make a choice next Monday. Now, I have no clue what the Packers are going to do with making room for Mike Neal. I think it's a given they're going to make room for him somehow. I don't think they're going to cut Mike Neal, which is an option. They can cut him and just cut him loose and whatever and be done. I don't think they're going to do that after the preseason he had. He seemed to play well and he looks committed, and maybe he's over his mistakes he's made. All things being equal, maybe they cut Philip Merling, defensive lineman, been with the Packers, you know, since the offseason when they signed him as a free agent. He played in the first couple games of the year, made a couple tackles, didn't really do anything too notable. He was actually inactive this past Sunday against the Saints. So that kind of maybe gave you an indication. He was a healthy inactive, by the way. So that gives you an indication that maybe the Packers are moving on from him and don't need him anymore. All things being equal, I suppose that would be my guess. But you just can't preclude anything, any injuries from happening or anything like that where they could decide for whatever reason to use that injured reserve exemption where they could place a guy like James Starks, Greg Jennings on injured reserve for 5 weeks and get to save a roster spot. I don't know if they would do that. Ted the Sledge says here, he's predicting Richardson to injured reserve. I don't know. It's just, I don't know what the Packers would do with any injury situations or, you know, God forbid, knock on wood, all of a sudden the Packers do suffer a severe injury on Sunday and they don't activate Neal. Well, then your decision is made for you. So, it's just too hard to say, but, we will We will find out. We will find out. Anyhow. And you know, on top of that, too, the Packers have a couple more decisions coming forward here. The Packers have three players on the physically unable to perform list. Derek Sherrod, Frank Zombo, Andrew Corliss. They are all eligible to begin practicing after week six, so in just two more weeks. And again, that's just when they become eligible. I think there's a three-week window in which the Packers can start practicing them. They don't have to, so anywhere within those 3 weeks. So, you know, as soon as these people are eligible, do not expect the Packers to make roster moves right away. They have 3 weeks to start practicing, and then I think when they start practicing, they have some like another 3 weeks to decide, are they going to make room for them on the roster, or how are they going to make room for them? So, yeah, you know, it's something where I guarantee you Derek Sherrod, they're going to make room for him. I don't know about the other two. I would guess that they would put Andrew Corliss on injured reserve and end his season. I don't know, though. Again, we kind of wait and see how he progresses. And then with Frank Zombo, I would guess they would cut Frank Zombo. But again, I just don't know. I couldn't tell you for sure. Interesting talk here on the live blog, too, about Kevin Lamb saying, I would like to see more of Mike Daniels in pass rushing situations. Yeah, interesting case there. I would, too. You know, he was inactive the very first game of the year. I think he was nursing a little bit of an injury. And ever since that time, he's kind of seen a little bit more playing time all the time. Mike Daniels and the Packers pretty much using him only as a nickel pass rusher, only using him in those type of situations. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I'd like to see what he's got because I do think he's shown flashes. And meanwhile, Jarrell Worthy, the Packers' other rookie defensive lineman, he hasn't shown all that much. And again, he's flashed here and there. So, I mean, neither of them have really jumped out yet, but be interesting to see what they provide as they get more experienced and you know, time goes on there. So, I do think the Packers are doing a good job in getting guys who have quickness at least. On that defensive line in the Packers nickel situations, you know, whereas a lot of times last year they had the biggest guys on the team, BJ Raji and Ryan Pickett. And granted, BJ Raji does have some quickness, but Ryan Pickett doesn't really have, you know, quickness, I wouldn't say. That's not his strength. Packers do try to get some guys on the field who are a little bit more mobile, a little bit could provide a little bit more pass rush, even though they haven't really done it yet. You just hope that maybe things click with them. Click with them. As PF Nate Yonke here checking in on the live blog saying, both Worthy and Daniels have one sack and one hurry. However, Daniels has done it on 26 pass rushes while Worthy has on 102. Interesting to see that. There you go. A little bit of a comparison there. Daniels doing it in basically one quarter of the playing time that Worthy has. Interesting. You know, Nathan Yonke talked about it earlier during our interview. The Packers' pass rush as a whole, quite disappointing against the Saints. You know, from a guy like Clay Matthews, while he did have a sack, he had 50 pass rushes that game, and only having one sack and whatever many hurries or whatever he had. But I guess that you'd like to see more production out of him in the, you know, if he's going to rush the passer that amount of time. So a little bit disappointing there. I mean, at least Clay Matthews did get to the quarterback at least one time, though, you know, so kudos to him for doing that. I guess a little bit of the burden falls on the other pass rushers. We're not seeing much from the defensive line at all. you know, whether it's Worthy, Daniels, B.J. Raji, anyone, although credit, again, we'll credit C.J. Wilson for getting to the quarterback once. But the other outside linebacker position, you know, not getting much production there from either Nick Perry or Eric Walden. And here we go. Good question from John on the live blog. How badly is Perry hurt? I heard a comment that he's hurt more than we know, which is why he didn't play much against the Saints. You know, I had heard there, like, in week one, he had hurt his hand. I'm not sure the extent of it. And that's, he didn't end up getting a whole lot of playing time in week two against the Bears. And you know, has kind of seen his, you know, play drop a little bit since that time as Eric Walden has come back. But I don't know. I mean, I heard it's his hand. I don't know if anything else is injured, but you have to assume he's not playing with a cast. Nick Perry isn't. I think he's practiced with one, but not played with one, if I have that correct. Or some sort of, you know, padding, at least not a cast padding on his hand. It's only going to get more healed as time goes on. So I think that's probably starting to be, you know, if anything, an excuse rather than the reason he's not playing well. And again, he's a rookie. You kind of give him the benefit of the doubt a little bit. He did have the nice sack against Seattle on Russell Wilson. But neither Perry nor Walden providing a whole ton of pass rush for the Packers early this season. And again, they've done a little bit, each of them has, just not a ton. So it'd be interesting to see if they can going forward. And maybe it's time to start seeing what Desmond Moses can do a little bit. He does get a little bit of playing time on what the psycho package is, or is it the dime package? They bring him in and see what they got there. But Desmond Moses not getting a whole lot of playing time so far. He did play very well in the preseason, I thought. So maybe it's time to see what he's got going forward here. Anyhow, a very good discussion today about these things that are going on in the world of the Green Bay Packers as we get ready for a Colts game this upcoming Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts. Anyhow, that's going to do it for today's show, folks. Thank you so much for joining us here at Railbird Central. We'll be back on Friday once again. Like I said, our guest on Friday will be Kareem Copeland, the former Packers beat writer at the Press Gazette, now at NFL.com, going to help us talk about Indianapolis and preview the Packers game against the Colts. So excited about that. On behalf of Jamie Jores, on behalf of John Rahor, I'm Brian Kirvu. We'll see you later, everyone. Make sure to check out Cheesehead TV all week long for your latest Green Bay Packers news and analysis. I leave you today with a song called One Step Closer by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. I'll see you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.